At this point, I'd like to invite Dr. Jan Kavan from the UN General Assembly, currently the president of that body, to address us at rather more length. Would you like to use the lectern?
Ladies and gentlemen, dear friends, I'm, I think, another member of the panel who is not an international lawyer or a lawyer at all. However, I think it's a great honor for me to address you on this topic, but not being an international lawyer, and I would prefer to confine myself to the topic which is slightly more relevant to my current experience, and that's to the role of the United Nations. I also recently supported at my own country in the Czech Republic, at my own party's Congress, the Social Democratic Party's Congress, a resolution which included our belief that the war against Iraq violated international law, and to a certain extent, surprisingly maybe, since then I faced many problems indeed. Maybe some of you even read a few days ago an article in The Guardian which claimed that I obstructed my government in the run-up to the Iraq war, which is not the case, let alone that even I was implicated in a murder plot, an allegation which was made also recently in The Observer, not the case. Recently, the Iraqi crisis had seized, and rightly so, our attention as clearly the most outstanding issue before the United Nations. The Security Council, which, as you know, is the UN organ primarily responsible for maintaining peace and security, failed to produce a workable multilateral solution to the Iraq's defiance of its resolutions. The lack of consensus demonstrated how differently member states understood and evaluated the situation in Iraq, based clearly on their diverse perspectives, historical experience, and cultural backgrounds. The divisions that were generated by the Iraqi crisis within the UN are obvious. First and foremost, I believe that today we need to work toward healing the rifts, particularly in the Security Council. We don't have such a rift in the General Assembly, which I preside over. The first step, although small and uneasy in this direction, was the recent adoption by the Security Council of the resolution mentioned here already by Sue McGregor, 1483, on 22nd of May, which ended the UN sanctions against Iraq. I believe it is a small step, very small step, but in the right direction. It's a compromise heavily weighted towards one side, I agree, but still enabling the United Nations to have a foot in the door and possibly to be invited to fully come in when and if, but I would say rather when, the problems will mount instead of being solved. Although most visible on the question of Iraq, it seems to me that the rift is really not only about Iraq. It's also, and I would say foremost, about a functioning international system where one single nation, in this case the United States, possesses an unprecedented military and economic power. A nation which is today so powerful that it can almost afford to ignore the entire international order. I did say deliberately almost, but not entirely. I do believe that the United States needs the legitimacy and the existence of a world order that only the United Nations can provide, at least in the eyes of the rest of the world. America's dependency on this legitimacy, on UN's legitimacy, is still relevant, and it might be the organization's opportunity to prove itself beneficial to its largest contributor. The U.S. participation in the UN, I think it's important to America's leadership. A weakened United Nations would ultimately mean much more costly involvement for America in the world, despite the fact that maybe not all U.S. politicians see it that way today. On the other hand, I have to admit that U.S. absence in UN's activities would cripple the organization politically as well as financially. I do believe that for all its shortcomings, real or perceived, the United Nations is still the only forum which has the grassroots experience and personnel to deal with a wide range of crises, whether in the field of humanitarian relief or helping people to rebuild their lives and their countries, promoting human rights and the rule of law in conflict management and, of course, in post-conflict peace building. The UN has an extensive experience in post-conflict reconstruction in Bosnia and Herzegovina, Kosovo, and, of course, East Timor, or in post-conflict peace building in Sierra Leone, and, of course, most recently in Afghanistan. So I am convinced that the United Nations has to play a vital role, and I mean vital role in reality, not just in being paid a lip service, in both the economic reconstruction and the political transformation of the post-conflict Iraq. It seems to me that the global community needs today more than ever to work together intensively and courageously in order to build a more secure and rule-based world in which human freedom and life and dignity can flourish. We can generally acknowledge that the global community has become much more interdependent, be it for trade, investments, solving problems related to climate change, or eradicating poverty and terrorism. I do believe that we have to work together to transfer what I would call global insecurity into global responsibility. Today, the number of areas where multilateral action is seen and needed is far larger than ever. I will not have time, despite the gracious offer by the organizers to give me 10 minutes to list all the different fields. But as I read so often, even in the UK papers, that possible suspicions that UN is irrelevant, and then it was argued on a reduction of the United Nations only to peace and security field, and peace and security field only to one conflict in Iraq. Let me at least just list fields like globalization, fact that problems cross national frontiers more freely than people, and therefore concerted multilateral action is the only way we can protect ourselves from concerns affecting the environment, proliferation of illicit drugs, weapons of mass destruction, trafficking in human beings, poverty, terrorism, and others. I would argue that with all the various taxing issues, one can say that multilateralism is like an exercise in shared pain in the international sense. So, I would conclude by stressing that if it is true, as I think the Prime Minister Blair recently said, that we are now living more in a unipolar world rather than a multilateral one, if unipolar world would mean the right to ignore multilateral institutions like the United Nations or tenets of international law, then it has to be opposed by those who are opposed to the potential slide into what I would call a legal jungle. Without doubt, United Nations is going through a critical phase. At the same time, it has to be acknowledged that the UN is indeed collectively far greater than the sum of its individual parts. It has no doubt achieved great successes, but I'm also prepared to admit that it has its great share of failures. I'm convinced that it's still the most appropriate instrument for ensuring that enabling environment is created in places of conflict and suffering in which the people can shape their own future and determine their own destiny. I recall a kind of what I would call a realpolitik observation made by late British director Stanley Kubrick, who noted once that, if I quote, powerful states often behave like gangsters, and small states often behave like prostitutes. I'm convinced that multilateral institutions tend to restrict the maneuvering scope of the powerful states by various conventions and agreements, let alone by international law. And at the same time, they help to empower small states by shared solidarity and by joint actions, therefore helping in time to make Stanley Kubrick's observation less and less true. I hope that's the case. Thank you very much.